Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG pod overflow, the Cinephobe cold opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
Said the OG pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing it, and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays. You're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like? Because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora. He's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/Count the Dings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Hey, listener, Zach Harper here. Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. Here's how it works. The Pick'em game. Pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game for a chance to win big. How big, you ask? I'm so glad you asked that question, listener. You can win up to 100 times your money in a single night. Pick between 2 and 5 players, build a pick'em entry. You can also do rivals picks. You can put like Tyrese Haliburton and Jalen Brunson against each other, and whoever has more points, more assists, more rebounds, whatever you want to do, that is your rivals pick. I would maybe go with Jalen Brunson in these playoffs. By the way, in the regular season, Jalen Brunson, scoring tear, going higher on his point totals all the time. Joel Embiid, whenever he did actually play, higher on his scoring totals all the time. Victor Wembanyama, for the next 15, 20 years, here's a pro tip for you, take higher on the blocks. That's right. So you're probably wondering, how do you sign up? Oh my God, listener, you are full of good questions today. Sign up with the promo code DING, that's D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. $250, man, that's a lot. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the App Store. And don't forget to register with our code DING, D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick and first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. Must be 18 or older, 21 or older in Massachusetts, Arizona, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. Arizona 1-800-NEXT-STEP. That's 1-800-639-8783. Or text NEXT STEP to 53342. New York, call the 24/7 HOPE line at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So what do you think?
It's showtime.
Hey,
how we always do about this time. Welcome back to another episode of Showtime. I'm your host, Jason Madison, joined as always by my co-host, Bethany Anderson, Anthony Mays. What up, y'all? How y'all feeling?
Hey, I'm feeling great. How you feeling? I know you guys were watching some basketball. How did the outcome turn out? I didn't watch.
Well, it was winning time for John Morant, I'll tell you.
It was
okay.
Yeah. That's what winning time is. It wasn't showtime, it was winning time. That's for damn sure. Yeah. Put on a show. But we did it, guys. We did it. We did it. We got a black dick.
Well, almost. It was a light skin.
Come on.
I felt like we were going to litigate it later. We're still looking for darker shades of dong on HBO.
But a black
dick is a black dick. And, you know, we did it. I think it's because of us.
I think it is because of us. I think the creators, the editors, they listened to our podcast. They heard our cries and they answered the call, you know? So, we saw Jamal Wilkes' penis in the show. Yeah, it was Jamal Wilkes. Yeah, it was very pale for a black man, but it is what it is. I feel like there was some color correction or something on there.
They were under the fluorescent lights of the locker room, Jason. You know, it was washed out.
Right.
We didn't get the right accent lighting. We didn't get the pinks and the light blues that we needed to really accentuate the dong.
Yeah,
I've always been confused, like, watching porn. It's like, sometimes you don't see the guy, you just see the girl, whatever. And I'm like, I can't tell by the color of the penis, like, is this a black man, white man, a person of color? What's going on? Who is this?
Yeah. I don't like watching white guys in porn.
Really?
Yeah. Because it's just like when I watch porn, I kind of want to feel like it's me a little bit, you know? And it takes the whole me-ness of it out of it if I'm watching white guys. And they like fuck kind of weird too in porn. So.
Wow. All right. Well, we're off to a hot start.
Yeah.
I see what you're saying. Yes, it does. It would take you out if you looked out and all of a sudden your dick is white. It wouldn't be right.
Yeah,
but
right?
Should we talk about a white kid with a possibly black dick in this week's Atlanta?
I mean, what about you, Mace? How do you feel about that? Don't leave me hanging.
No, I see what you're saying. It doesn't.
It's but how do you?
The
do
deciding
you watch,
factor for me.
Do you,
it's not the
do
deciding
you watch
factor
black porn?
To me. I do. I dabble.
Yeah. Okay.
But I think that, you know, it's too binary, man. Like, we only got really black and white dicks out there. Like, we are the podcast for dick equality
right.
for all dicks, not just on HBO shows, but also in porn. I want to see rainbow of dicks. I want to see all the colors. But let's talk about Trinity to the Bone.
Yeah. Chet Hanks.
To the Bone.
Made a fantastic cameo.
That was the highlight, right?
Yeah,
that was one
be.
Of the best parts.
It seemed like they made the whole episode around that moment.
Kind of, yeah. I'm with you on that.
It was kind of like a origin story.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah, no, exactly. Like, it seemed like Donald Glover was sitting in high one day and was like, oh, people are talking about Chet Hanks. Maybe they're talking shit about him. And he probably thought, like, you know, I really wonder how he got like that, you know, and thought critically and seriously about it. And this is the story he came up with.
Yeah, and he's been sitting on this for a while, right? Because the Chet Hanks story is a little bit stale at this point. But he hasn't had a television show in a couple years. So they had this one. They had this one on the big board and it made the cut. They got their own episode.
I love this episode so much. My best friend of 23 years, Trinidadian. Her mom, her accent, I just love it so much. I've gotten to know my best friend, her mom, and her extended family that lives in Georgia. And being like seeing Trinidadians on the stage like this, because we really don't get to see much of them. Like, we get Jamaicans everywhere. You know what I mean? They're all over when it comes to the Caribbean. That's who we're going to get. But to get Trinidadians just warmed my heart so much. I haven't had a chance to talk to my best friend about how she appreciated the episode, However, we're gonna mm-hmm. I'm gonna check in with her soon.
Yo, you should get her on the show for real. Like when Winning Time ends, we should bring her on for the Atlanta episode and get her thoughts on the whole season, because she's the one that introduced the concept of the White Ally, right?
Which yep, sure did.
Once again, white allies on display. Yeah. We got the rich white family mm-hmm. who thinks that they're doing the right thing, really thinks that they're doing well, but then there's the whole conversation of like, we should get a white person to raise our kids, or we should get a Chinese nanny. Oh, those are too expensive. Like, just snitching on yourselves with that. But
those are real bedroom conversations, right? Mm-hmm. Like when all the walls come down and people want to have the real raw conversations, that's where they happen. And that was about as authentic a racial conversation, you know, you could get, especially when you're talking about your child. And I feel like people get even a little bit more shade of racist when their kid is involved, because, you know, they're very sensitive about that. And, I thought it was very honest. I felt like the dad was kind of like the opposite of the guy from the
reparations
guy. Like he seemed to me like the good white ally. Like he was well intended. Like, you know, his heart was seemingly in the right place. You know, when he's talking to his son about death, and, you know, just even how he talked about race, and, you know, like even his like hesitancy to open her package, you know, he kind of didn't want anything to do with it because he didn't want to me, it seemed like he didn't want to feel like he was invading her privacy, you know, even after she passed. And he seemed to, you know, like I said, have his heart in the right place. And it was funny because even in that, like, he's kind of stumbling over himself, coughing up the hot curry jerk sauce, oh, whatever.
That was the funniest part by far.
Yeah.
Because it said mild on the label. And mild? Yeah. He really died on that shit.
So I noticed at the beginning of the episode, he's, you know, out running, listening to some rap I've never heard of.
Yeah.
Do you guys know what that was? Like, what? Who was that?
I don't know. Might have been Paperboy. I don't know. Nah.
I did. Did you guys see the Paperboy flyers in the parking lot?
No.
When he goes to park the car, there's Paperboy coming home promotion for a show in New York City. So I'm assuming that we're headed towards that. Or I guess that was probably Atlanta. I don't know why I said New York City. I guess I just assumed. But
I think it was
probably
New York.
Coming home to Atlanta for the final episode, I would guess.
Yeah, I was guessing it was definitely New York because the
building, right? I guess that's what
threw
me off.
Yeah, it seemed like a New York like city, the whole vibe, and also because of, you know, when you associate kind of like Jamaican, Trinidadian, all those people, Dominicans, you know, you think New York.
Because, mm-hmm. And they also said that, you know, she migrated to New York from Trinidad. And
I knew there had to be some reason I thought that. I also wanted to shine a light on, I think that it was really cleverly written how the white parents, when they're thrust into actually raising their child, they feel all this guilt and they're concerned, like, oh my God, are we doing this right? Are we doing this wrong by having somebody else raise our kids? On and on. And the way they tied that all back together at the end, when at the funeral, the family starts losing it because they feel like their mom wasn't there for them, was only there for these white kids like Chet Hanks in the back row. And just that was a real nice parallel. Like it's a systematic process where someone is always getting neglected, right? Like these parents, they'd either be neglecting their kids, but they can afford to bring somebody else in. Then that person is now neglecting their kids. And it's just a cycle that continues.
I have a great grandmother who moved to Philly. She used to work for white family. She raised generations of kids. And, you know, we got family in North Carolina who are growing up with other family members while she's up here, you know, making money and sending money back home. So I definitely understood that whole dynamic because someone is being neglected, unfortunately, but you got to go out here and make this money.
How did her kids feel about that, her not being around?
No one's really spoken about it. And even in this episode, it doesn't come out until the funeral.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, the one daughter, her other two kids were fine. It was just that one daughter who was like, yo, what the fuck? I saw that someone pointed out on Twitter that the daughter who had an issue was the only one of the three who didn't have, like, she didn't have much of an accent.
Right.
So it shows that she really wasn't around her mom that much because she didn't talk like her. I don't know if that has anything to do with, you know, her mom being around or her just kind of not having an accent to blend in with her friends or whatever in school. Because I know that's a thing, too. Like, you don't want to speak in this accent so you sound like everyone else.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I read her as the youngest child, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. And her name was Princess.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So there you go.
I love the uncle. The yes. uncle coming yes. in. I mean, my favorite part of the episode is when he calls the little boy small man as he's walking. And he's like, this is how we sat. And I was like, that's yeah. perfect. That was a nice, beautiful yeah. moment. Because he really like, because it was funny because you see him in that earlier, like kind of shilling himself to the family, like, hey, you guys need somebody to take care of your kid. But then you see he does have the ability to connect with the kid, like, very quickly, you know, and, like, he just has that energy about him. And he stopped the whole, like, you know, all of their activity, which is so crazy because it's like I remember just kind of growing up and hearing about all of this stuff. My dad worked at the cemetery for 30 years. So,
oh, wow.
I didn't go to like a lot of funerals, but I was around like all of that energy all the time, whether if I was like visiting at work or something. So you hear about people falling out at the funeral, you know,
yeah,
trying to jump in the casket, like all of this stuff, like it's like stories I heard like a million times. And so to see them like kind of thrust all of them at once in one thing. And it's also kind of like, you know, common like black things that you hear about like at funerals. And they put them all, jumbled them all in one. And I thought it was like kind of hilarious the way they did it. And then he kind of like freeze frames like everybody like, hey, wait, like the white people are leaving. Like you're scared yeah. of the white people.
Amazing. Amazing stuff.
Which is great.
Also, you got Chet Hanks running up and yelling world star. So not only is the Chet Hanks joke a couple years old, but Chet Hanks in the show is about 3 years behind the culture yelling world star. Maybe more than 3 years. How long has it been since we were in the world star era?
But still, like, that also shows something about Chet being raised by this woman.
Right.
He has his accent or whatever his name is on this episode. I'm not sure. I can't remember.
Doesn't matter. His name's Chet.
It's Chet, yeah.
And in all of this chaos, he doesn't sympathize with what's going on with, you know, this family expressing loss in this way. Instead, he wants to turn it into an internet moment. It's like, yo, what the fuck? I thought you were for the family and with the family. And like, here we are having another quote unquote ally really showing their true colors. Like, you really ain't about that life.
All right. There's only one thing I really got to ask before we get out of Atlanta, which is what the hell is with that airdrop?
What was
What was that?
Airdrop.
Is that something that happens? Someone airdrops the dad a gooch.
Oh, yeah. Bro, that's the type of stuff that happens in the show that's just like, they just do it for the sake of being weird. Like, you know?
Of course, that's what I'm saying.
What value does that add to anything? Like, nothing.
I don't know. If it had paid off in any way, if it was connected to anything in any way, you know, maybe I missed the gooch callback. But
yeah.
It was a weird, weird, distracting moment.
Yeah, this is not a Gucci quality podcast.
No, this is a zero tolerance on Gucci's getting airdropped at a funeral. We got to draw the line somewhere.
Yeah, right? That's where it is, at the Gucci. That's where we draw the line.
There it is.
It's very specific.
I was trying to figure that out because it was like, I've seen some people talking about it on social media, like, okay, what could this have meant? Some people feel like it was like the caretaker spirit saying, hey, I'm trying to send you a photo. Like, I'm trying to send you something. That's the only correlation that you can come
I'm not rolling. The only other thing I wanted to shout out in the show was the kid and how to, you know, obviously, like, they show Chet Hanks is like the older version of what he is, but like, the way he was feeling the vibes in the church and like all of his kind of like you know, from him wanting the you know, her season ends and, you know, she walks into class and all that. He was taking like so many cues and she was really raising him.
Yo, did you notice that when he was eating his bland food, he was watching The Proud Family?
Yes, yes, I did notice that.
I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah, yeah.
Threw me off. Like, what is going on here?
But that's okay. What happens. But, you know, basically, I think that was part of the whole, like, them explaining the Chet Hanks thing and, like, how these white kids end up getting raised black is because they have black caretakers or, you know, caretakers from brown and black countries.
Yeah.
Only 3 episodes left of Atlanta, folks. We got 3 more weeks of it. Episode 9, Jason, I think you're going to like this episode description. Rich Wigga, poor Wigga. Black and white episode? Yawn. Emmy bait. Why do they hate black women so much? Question mark.
Wow. That's crazy.
Jason's face.
He's like, oh my God.
Did you write that?
They do exist.
Yeah. Upcoming. Oh, yeah, my writing debut.
So here's the deal. Usually when I do these ad reads, I've never really tried the product until they became sponsors, and then they give us samples and I try them and then I endorse them. I'm not trying to make it seem like it's fake. It's real. I've tried them and I like them, but it's not like I've ever used these things before they became sponsors. Today's a little different. Credit Karma. I'm telling you right now, I've used Credit Karma to fix my credit, to figure out what the problematic things on my credit report was, to pay those things off, to get a loan in order to pay off some of those things, to apply for credit cards, to get credit cards I'll qualify for, to take care of them the right way, and then to make sure I level up. Credit Karma uses your credit data to find loan offers that are personalized to you so you can have a better idea of what loan amount you can get approved for. Credit Karma will even show your chances of approval so you can choose between loan offers that you're more likely to get approved for and apply with more confidence. I've done this, ladies and gentlemen, and it absolutely works. Comparing loan offers on Credit Karma is 100% free, and best of all, it won't affect your credit scores and can save you money. Credit Karma, apply with more confidence today. I am talking to you as someone who has fixed his credit using Credit Karma before they ever paid me to do this stuff right now. That's right. Ready to apply? Head to creditkarma.com/loan offers to see personalized offers. Go to creditkarma.com/loan offers to find the loan for you. That's creditkarma.com/loan offers.
All right. Y'all ready to get some winning time?
Yeah, let's get it cracking. I got a confession. I didn't get through my second take of it this
okay.
week.
Wow, we're all slipping. You know, it's a stretch run yeah. here, and we're trying to make the playoffs.
They're trying to
and
make the playoffs.
It's just tough, guys. It's tough.
I felt like Sally Field. You know, I was just that's my last breath.
No, before we started recording, I was telling Maze that usually I take notes, but this episode I did not. I just
yeah, me too.
Watch it. I just wanted to watch it.
We're flying blind, folks. We're throwing away the playbook. All right,
that's right.
We're just freestyling it this time. Mm-hmm. But I gotta say, we're 8 episodes into this season. I thought this was one of the worst ones.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's why it was hard for me to watch it twice. Not, I mean, also my schedule, but like,
what?
Yeah, I agree with you, Maze, 100%. Air high five.
Why?
Boom, Birdman hand rub. Why? Okay, so look, I like Sally Field a lot, but it was easily 20 to 30 minutes of the episode was her going out.
Okay.
And it just didn't feel like she was enough of the core of the show to, like, in an ensemble like this where we got so much going on, it didn't feel like we should have shut it down as much as we did for her. I get it. You know, I'm also being kind of a bitter, like, heartless person when I say it. I understand. Like, it's just not what I'm really after. And then I thought that the way they handled the basketball was some of the worst.
Yep.
Like, the basketball scenes we got were our man Wood Harris setting back picks for Kareem in the post. Like every, it was like, what happened this game? Well, Spencer Haywood sent a back pick for Kareem and he scored a layup. End of game. Next game, what happened? Same shit. And it's like, okay, like that's barely how they run offense. Like,
yeah.
Right.
The only other thing they do is dunks to Michael Cooper. Like they have no other things to show. So that was bad. And then it just, the structure of the episode, the countdown, then we're in the playoffs, then we're blowing through the playoffs, and all of a sudden it's the finals. I'm just like, okay, man. They
handle that so terribly.
What I was worried about all year of how are they going to pace this out, and wow, we spent a whole episode on training camp, and we spent a whole episode on this and on that. It showed here they had to rush to get to the finale, and it felt forced.
Yeah, it felt extremely forced. I agree with you 100%, Maze. Like, they just fucking jammed it in and then just, you know.
That's what she said.
Exactly. And then they climaxed way too fast. Like they, and it wasn't
bad recipe right there. You don't want to do both of those at the same time.
No, but that's what they did. And then there was no creativity to how they showed the playoffs or showed any other teams or showed like any tension about, oh, we don't want to play this team or anything that goes on in the playoff atmosphere. It was just like 9 days, 8 days, blah, blah, blah. Like, and it was just like, I don't care about these title cards. I don't care about Sally Field dying for 30 minutes. Like, this show is supposed to be about the Lakers, not Jerry Buss's mom. You know what I'm saying? And it just, if they would have had some sort of entertaining thing to bounce off of the Sally Field dynamic, I would have maybe forgave it a little bit more. But it was like May said, the way they handled the basketball stuff was so whack. This was the wackest basketball scenes that they showed. And the only thing I could
bank. And it should have been the best.
It should have been the best.
That's the problem.
Like the whole lead up, and that's the whole thing too, right? Is that in reality, you know, at the time, people wanted to see the Lakers play the Celtics. They don't end up playing the Celtics. They end up playing the Sixers. The way that they didn't make that dramatic at all and
didn't.
And just didn't get, like, they built the season up. Red Auerbach, Larry Bird, you know, like, right, all of this, building this tension up. Lakers, Celtics, these are the guys you got to take down. And then the way that they handled it on screen in the most, like, laissez-faire, like, oh, we don't give a fuck. Oh, Larry Bird's going to look back at Magic and talk to him through the camera. Like, what? That was fucking whack. Like, show the Celtics trying or caring or anything. Like,
show Dr. J beating the Celtics because we just met him last episode, you know?
Right. Yeah, yeah.
That could have continued. It was, you're right.
Yeah,
please,
so that.
Please balance out this podcast. Please provide your positive take.
I'm sitting here now with the sad face
because you
guys kind of like changed my mind.
No.
I really enjoyed all of the Spencer Haywood that we got this episode. Because, you know, at the beginning where we're like, okay, Wood Harris is supposed to be in here. And then he shows up and it's like, why Wood Harris playing Spencer? Like, why this great of an actor coming in to play Spencer? It must be something serious. And we're getting to the meat and potatoes of Spencer and his drama. So I was really digging this whole storyline. Like, I get what you guys are saying about Sally Field. Yes, we could have done without about 15 minutes of her on screen. And if not, we could have had more Jeannie, you know, with her, I guess, being shunned out by this job by her dad, where everyone thinks that she's super qualified for. And we haven't gotten enough of Claire. I need more Claire. Right. She comes in, she delivers the good and bad news. About which, this is something that I completely forgot about, that the playoff format was completely different, that we had
just get a bye.
Whole different format. Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah. So the Lakers got a bye in the first round. Dr. Buss is trying to make his $3 million back so he doesn't have to pay the Great Western Bank, and or he can pay the bank and they don't own the Lakers outright. And yeah, Frank and Claire are there to let him know that, hey, we just missed out on $500,000 because we were too good. So, I mean, that scene was cool. And that's the thing. It's like, those scenes are cool. But the whole thing with them like breaking into the house, you know, like they could have cut that down at least 2-3 minutes. I don't know. I feel like the show forgot who his best characters were. You know, Pat Riley, you know, Adrian Brody as Pat Riley didn't get enough screen time. He never does.
And I think they did a, you know, we're still playing out the Jack, Paul, Pat power struggle. Like that came to a conclusion this episode. I thought that was all right. Who didn't get any fucking time was Magic.
Right.
Literally all Magic got was, yes. Oh, I'm waking up in bed with three white women. And like Rhonda didn't have the baby and it wasn't mine anyways. And I have proof, but I don't know what that means because it's 1980. But anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I was wondering, like, how did he get proof?
I don't think paternity tests were like
a thing.
Nah.
Nah.
So,
nah.
Not like that.
I don't know what that means. But yeah, it felt when you build the cast up this big, people are going to get benched, you know, and I feel like they benched the wrong people this episode. I feel like it was just poor timing. But let's talk about Wood Harris because I do think that was really good.
Yes.
And Spencer Haywood.
Hello, listener. Guess who's back? It's me, Anthony Mays, your favorite butcher turned podcast producer, and I'm here to talk to you about ButcherBox. ButcherBox is the most convenient way to get high-quality meat and seafood that you can trust delivered straight to your doorstep, free shipping, vacuum-sealed packaging. It's ready to go right then. It's ready to pop in the freezer. You get exclusive member deals and a variety of high-quality cuts at an amazing value. Going to the grocery store can be a huge pain. You're usually in a rush at an inconvenient time. You're waiting in line at the meat counter. You're taking a number. Maybe this place doesn't have a number. You're jostling with fellow customers. You're trying to get that ribeye that you want or that nice piece of salmon. Maybe the butcher that you're dealing with has a bad attitude or something. I don't know. That was never me, I promise. But maybe it happens. ButcherBox takes all of that out of the picture. You are always prepared with meat and seafood in the freezer, and you're not going to find quality for this price anywhere else other than ButcherBox. So sign up at butcherbox.com/dings, D-I-N-G-S, and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional $20 off. You can choose salmon, chicken breasts, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/dings and use code DINGS, D-I-N-G-S, to choose your free for a year offer plus get $20 off your first order. Hello, listener. I'm sure you don't need me to tell you that we at Cinephobe love our pets. Zach and Boogie are inseparable. I've got two cats and a dog, and Amin is giving his best ass on performance to convince dog owners that he loves their pet.
Hey, Noodle. Hey, boy. How you doing? And Noodle's just like,
Which is why today's episode is sponsored by the ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program. For many pet parents, summer is all about making travel plans like adventuring through the national parks, visiting pet-friendly beaches, or road tripping across the country. Wherever your journeys take you and your furry friend, you can help protect them along the way with a plan from ASPCA Pet Health Insurance. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customizable accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they may need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping ensure that your pet's plan is as unique as they are, because vet bills can really add up, especially when you're least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim, and you'll receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/dings, D-I-N-G-S. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/dings. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/dings. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independence American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer and is not engaged in the business of insurance.
Is deep, deep in the sauce. He's cracked out. He's passing out, sitting up at practice. They have to shake him awake. He says, "I was meditating, motherfucker."
How?
And then Landsberger line of the episode, Jason.
Yes.
pretty angry for a guy who's meditating.
Zing. Yeah, that was good. Yeah, that was good.
But I like what it generated, what it churned up with Kareem. Kareem felt really responsible for him. I like that whole side of it. And then we get to the vote. And so I put it to you, my co-hosts. Are you keeping Spencer Haywood on the team, or are you sending Spencer Haywood to rehab? Bethany, what is your judgment?
Amy Winehouse, rehab, baby. Peace out. Go take care of that. Get that monkey off your back.
Hey, you know what's funny? When I was watching it, in the scene with Kareem and Spencer in the locker room, I was really hoping for like a Love and Basketball type of resolution where they go play on the forum floor for Spencer's ability to play on the team still. I would have loved that with Kareem's vote hanging in the balance. But Kareem being the stern man that he is, he already made his decision. And basically once the free will in Magic Johnson was on the side of tough love, he kind of left him with no choice. So, yeah, I mean, I would have let him play on the team just because you needed him. He was their only true four, as Pat said. And he did end up playing on the team. So it was kind of an interesting, like, revisionist history because he does play in the finals. I made sure to look that up. He played in two games in the finals. So I don't know if he got fired.
I don't know if they benched him, like, mid-finals. Man.
He might be the person to be most upset about his portrayal in the show, being that he did end up playing on the final squad.
I went out of my way to not look up what happened. Thanks, Jason.
Yeah. Well, now you know. I mean, I had to know. You know, it was just like, that's something you can't dramatize that and then me not have the curiosity to want to find out. True. But Wood Harris was great. And I started to think, like, is Wood Harris my favorite actor, like, ever? Because he might be. Like, ooh. I have personal favorites when it comes to everything. You know, I think most people are like that. A lot of people like who everybody else likes, you know, whether it's like Leo or Denzel or, you know, Michael Jordan or whoever your person is and whatever they do. I think Wood Harris is like kind of how certain people feel about like Cameron or Joe Budden or like, you know, certain people like really love like certain guys. I think I feel that way about Wood Harris because I don't think there's anything I've ever seen him in that I didn't think he was great in. And for like the last four decades now, he's had iconic roles.
Yeah.
He has. I mean, who's better than Ace, Avon, Julius, and Remember the Titans? I forget my man's name from Above the Rim, but I mean.
Above the Rim, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, who could be more menacing than Tupac and Above the Rim? Like, you know, so, yeah. And he played the hell out of Spencer Haywood in that scene with Kareem, you know, when he's talking about the sharecropping. I thought that scene was great. That was probably the best scene of the episode. I was wondering, did they get Sam Elliott to play the random guy whistling? I don't know if you guys got that reference, but yeah, I thought that was dope. You know, his whole speech about that, and basically, like you said, be having the monkey on his back and trying to overcome that, and having big hands as a kid, and just his whole journey and explaining that. I thought that was like kind of one of the key moments in the episode, and he did it well.
I see an award happening. I see an award coming his way. I don't think he really has won any awards.
I don't think he's ever. That's the thing that I love about him is like he's so underrated, and it's crazy to be so good and to be still underrated. But I don't know. I think it's just like if you're not one of the top two, three black actors, or you're not British, that it's hard for you to win awards.
Right. You know. So we were talking about something last week And one of our listeners sent me a DM and said, man, y'all let Maze get that off. Jay-Z is the coolest nigga in history. So I think Jay-Z is cool, but I understand if someone doesn't think Jay-Z is cool, I get it too. Because sometimes he has like some moments where I'm like, okay. Like all these pictures of him like playing sports. He looks awkward as fuck. He doesn't.
I mean, Jay-Z is unathletic as hell. Like, he is not like, but he's still cool. He should never be on a field or court or anything like that. But
stick to what you know, Jigga.
Yeah.
So,
Maze, do you not have anything to say to defend yourself and your terrible take?
Look. Okay. I didn't say that Jay-Z isn't cool. I said he's not one of the coolest people. Like, that is an exclusive club. There's okay. not that many people in it.
So who's in this club?
Coolest people. So we, you know, we threw this around a little bit. We had some different ideas on it, on how to approach it. Prince. Prince yeah. is one of the coolest people out there, and he does it in a way that is entirely his own. Oof. Because it's not really clear if anyone's ever really had a conversation with Prince. It's kind of like people would just exist around him. So in terms of being that cool, there's not very many people on that level. So I pass back to both of you. You name a cool person and we'll see if Jay-Z fits into this picture anywhere.
Okay. I'll say I have two nominees. I think I may have mentioned one of them last time, but Andre 3000.
Okay.
Perfect.
Is cool, right? Like nobody would argue.
Ice cold.
Yeah, what's cooler than being cool? Yeah, I think that's one of the criteria, is that like nobody would argue with you about that person being cool, and Andre 3000 kind of fits that mold completely. The other person I was gonna say is Allen Iverson. I think right. Allen Iverson represents cool.
Okay.
Like, you know, like any, also it's like if any black person like you ask would say like they're cool without hesitation, like that's usually a good litmus test, you know, like older or younger. And like I think both of those guys kind of fit that bill.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I see guys, you know, not far from his age who have tattoos, the exact tattoos that AI has on his body, on their body, because he was that fucking cool.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's like, you got to be that person, like, that other people don't mind emulating you, and you don't even really get mocked for it either, you know?
Yeah.
So that's...
Okay. So... Now that we were just talking about him, but Wood Harris is on my list. I think he's cool as fuck.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He's just smooth. I don't know. I've kind of low-key had a crush on him for a while, but, you know, that's another topic. But, okay, right. So another person that's on this list that I don't really hear anyone talk about, because we only got a chance to have him for a few years in the public eye, but Chadwick Boseman. And I can say this because I actually met him, and in person, this is one of the coolest motherfuckers I've ever seen in my life. The way he walks, the way he talks, he just has a very commanding presence. When he walks into a room, the energy shifts in an incredible way. So Chadwick is on my list. Barack Obama, we mentioned him last week, mm-hmm. definitely on that list. Prince was my number one. He's the coolest.
I mean, like, he just doesn't even fit into any category. Like, he is an alien.
Yeah.
So of course he's the coolest, because who doesn't want to hang out with an alien?
Okay, I got one for you guys. So I was thinking about this, because we didn't mention any women. What about Rihanna?
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Because I feel like.
Yeah.
You know, because, and I don't want to like compare her to like, you know, other like female artists or whatever, but she has a certain, like, coolness, like, because other ones are like popular and you like them, and you know, I don't want to like single anybody out, but like, she has a different air about her That's yes, just like
you could hang out with Rihanna.
Yeah, like you would want to smoke a blunt with Rihanna.
You'd
like,
want to smoke a blunt with Rihanna, eat some tangerines with salt on it because that's what she's addicted to now. She's pregnant.
Yeah,
and just chill, just vibe. You know, like that'd be dope. I gotta represent for my white people out there. Harrison Ford.
Harrison Ford is pretty cool. Yeah,
one of the cool, like in his prime, even as an old man, but in his prime, one of the coolest dudes out there. I'm gonna go even further back. I'm gonna go even wider. Paul Newman, one of the coolest dudes
ever to
grace the silver screen. Those are my two franchise pillar white picks.
White cool guys. I agree with you on Paul Newman. B, if you haven't seen The Color of Money, you should watch that movie. Yeah, definitely. So I'm a huge Martin Scorsese fan, and that movie is one of the ones that just made me a huge fan. And I watched that movie like 30 times, and Paul Newman is cool as hell in it. And it's so dope because you get to see a young Tom Cruise, and he's playing he's playing such a good version of himself, like a just a young, energetic white dude who like kind of knows it all, like a smart ass. And he plays it to the bone. And then Paul Newman is like the cool, wise, older man, like dresses smooth, sharp, knows like the older black guy at the pool hall, like just as cool as you want to be, man. So yeah, that was a great entry there, Maze.
Yeah.
He doesn't just sell salad dressing, B.
That's right. Yeah, I got to check him out because I know a lot of people know him for salad dressing. That's crazy.
What about Arnold Palmer? He came up with a cool-ass drink.
I mean, yeah, I think that SportsCenter commercial is pretty cool where they see him make the Arnold Palmer live. But other than that, it's not like he has a gregarious personality or anything
I just wanted to bring that up because you brought up the Newman's Own. Was he the first person to mix lemonade and iced tea? Is that real?
Had to be there, man. I don't know. Young
yeah. I'm not sure.
We got anybody else we want to throw in the Hall of Fame here?
Quincy Jones.
Definitely Q.
Cool. Quincy.
Miles Davis.
Jones. See, I would say Miles Davis, but knowing his domestic abuse history.
Oh, right. Keep him off that take list. Him out. Okay, what about Lenny Kravitz?
Yeah, that's not cool. Lenny Kravitz? Right. Yes, Lenny Kravitz.
Yes!
He's playing for both teams.
Wait, what?
Switch hitter.
The Jews.
That is extremely Jewish.
Oh. I was like, wait, what?
Hey, man, 90s were a crazy time, all right? Maybe he did a little bit of that, too. But you know what? I would say Lisa Bonet is cooler than Lenny Kravitz.
Yeah.
Which is hard to do. But in terms of coolest couples.
Yeah.
I mean, they got a cool-ass family. Even the daughter, Zoe.
Cool-ass daughter. They got a cool-ass Jason stepdad. was dating old girl, and now they're still friends. Like, that. Yeah. Anybody associated with that whole family, very cool.
Yeah, they got it right. I got to figure it out.
Okay, I'm sorry. I've been kind of casually Googling here just to try to spark some ideas. I found a really dumb list. Top 10 coolest people of all time. Number one, Jesus. Number two, Bruce Lee. Number three, Eminem.
See, I was thinking about Eminem earlier, and he definitely does not go on the list.
No,
like,
what?
He, like, I was, because we were talking about Jay-Z, and I was thinking about rappers, and I was like, you know who wouldn't go on my coolest list? Eminem.
Number four, Chuck Norris. And I'm done with this list, folks.
Oh, my God. No, keep going.
Oh, my God.
You're never going to be Jesus, okay?
No, yeah, that's.
No, you said Eminem, and me and Jason were like, what? Fuck out of here.
Keep going, Mace. We got who else is on that list?
You don't want. Trust me. You don't. You really want the rest of this? Okay, fine. Number five, Michael Jackson. Number six, Arnold Schwarzenegger. Number seven, The Rock. Number eight, Will Smith. This list hasn't been updated since the Oscars. Number nine, Mick Jagger. Okay. And number 10, Jimmy Page. That's right. the guitarist from Led Zeppelin. I'm sure that one was that, high up on your list, right?
That list was all wrong. I wouldn't put it. Jesus is the only person who would have made my list.
Jesus is just all right with me. Jesus is just all right. Oh yeah.
Oh.
You know who's you know who's sneaky cool and kind of just seems to only really be getting cooler is Seth Rogen.
I can see that. Yeah.
Now that he's Seth making Rogen's pottery definitely very cool. And selling his own bougie weed, he's a cool man. Representing for the not so handsome, you know, which is violating my list, which I should point out. That's one of the reasons, like Jay-Z versus Seth Rogen.
Yeah, see,
I'm giving the edge to Jay-Z. I'm giving the edge to Jay-Z. He's
cool. Yeah, see, you got to tell the people why you didn't include Jay-Z on your cool list, because you said he's not handsome.
He's not elite handsome.
Elite handsome, okay?
Jay-Z is a handsome cool. man.
Yeah, sure.
He is elite cool. I'm sorry.
top 20? Maybe? Agree. I don't know.
Agree to disagree.
Whoever DMB can DMB again. You guys didn't let me get away with it. We audited it thoroughly. All right. Like, I hope you're happy now.
Wait. Okay. So before we finish the topic, I feel like there's one group of people who should definitely populate this list, which are comedians. And I don't, like you said, Seth Rogen, but
Dave Chappelle
is one.
Like, I don't care about his, like, current image. Dave Chappelle is one of the funniest people in the entire world, so he's always going to be an all-timer for me.
Mm-hmm. Cool as hell. I mean, I would put Larry David in there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, but, like, I think he's just funny. I don't know if he's cool. I don't know if I'd want to hang out with Larry David, because, honestly, I get, like, I can only watch so many Curbs before I'm like, okay, time to stop, turn off my Larry David brain, and just take a deep breath, you know, because he's relentless, man. He's fucking relentless.
Yeah.
But Leon in that show, that's a cool guy.
Oh, yeah. JB Smooth is cool as hell. Yeah.
All right. So, yes, Wood Harris is on my cool list. And this performance that he gave, that monologue, just, man, he's really, like, he just keeps going. He doesn't miss. Wood doesn't miss. Every project that he picks up, he brings his own style and flair to it and just turns it into his show. I love him.
No, he's dope.
No disagreement here. Yeah. No, yeah. This is a Wood Harris friendly podcast by all three of us. Yeah. I mean, all right, let's tie up this winning time. We got one episode left, right? This is it. It's the finals. We know that. We know what happens in the finals. They really tip their hand with the whole, hey, Magic, what are you doing all alone on the forum court by yourself? Oh, I'm working on a skyhook. Oh, no, that's not a skyhook. Skyhook's like this. Aha, foreshadowing. But other than that, which we know will happen, and they can redeem themselves with some good basketball in this finale. Like, show me some good basketball here. It'll go a long way. But what else do we need from the rest of the characters here? Is there anything that you're looking for from anybody else to come through in this finale?
Well, I don't know if you guys started watching They Call Me Magic. Did
not
you?
Yet.
No? Oh, okay. Well,
I've seen some reviews.
Yeah. I was going to, because I didn't take notes, I was going to spend a considerable amount of time talking about it. But I think the Magic and Cookie relationship is interesting. I didn't really, know the details of how it played out until I watched. I mean, I know they're together, and I know that she's been with him through thick and thin, but there was a interesting tidbit that we learned through the documentary that she was not with him through his 5 championship victories at all. And when I say with him, they were together, they were an item, but she was not in the same city as him during any of the playoff runs. Only during his last championship appearance, in which he lost to Michael Jordan in L.A. at the Forum, which I thought was crazy. And people were comparing Magic Johnson to Future. saying Future had nothing on Magic. He's the OG. And yeah, it's just, I want to see more Magic. You know, I want them the same way they gave a lot of energy to Dr. Buss this episode in the penultimate episode. I feel like it should kind of be a setup to spend the same amount of time, if not more, with Magic in the last episode. And I really just want to dive deeper into Magic's mindset. I feel like the way they set me up in episode 8 at the end, the conversation with him and Jerry West in the locker room, mm-hmm. Magic saying, I want to win, and getting that burst of confidence. Part of what pissed me off of this episode is that they didn't really pay that off at all, you know? And they just showed them winning, but it wasn't really focused on Magic's energy. Like you said, Maze, he was waking up with three white women, and then, oh, now we're on to the next round of playoffs. We avenged the loss against Seattle. Like, we didn't even see anybody on the Seattle team. Like, what the fuck was that? So, yeah, if you guys can focus on the basketball and focus on Magic Johnson and not just Kareem teaching him the sky hook, you know, more what his mindset is towards winning and why he doesn't need Cookie there, you know, because obviously that's a part of his mentality of, like, you know, some boxers don't have sex before their fight, and Magic has sex, but he doesn't obviously want that emotional connection to get in the way of what he's doing. And that's the thing that, as foul as it is probably what propels him to block out all the other shit. And, you know, we see that in Michael Jordan in a much less, I guess, toxic way in relationship terms. But Michael Jordan has his way in relation to the other players around him, you know. And Magic is more inviting to the people around him, but he just is a dick to his woman.
Yeah, I agree. I think because we started with that cold open with Magic, that we need to come full circle at some point and maybe end this with Magic, because that was just such a startling scene. And I know that's years after, you know, this first championship, but we need more Magic, because that last episode did not give us enough. What about you? What do you need to see, Maze?
What do I need to see? Landsberger needs to get a garbage time bucket, maybe a little celebration, you know? Something like that. He's uh-huh. been marginalized for way too long on this show, and he's clearly been a glue guy in the locker room, keeping this team together, keeping everybody loose with his one-liners. So that's
right.
what I'm looking for. But you know what? I feel like we're headed towards Pat Riley putting on the suit and slicking the hair back, even though that feels premature. It's really weird. Like, they really teased, you know, they got the Armani on the bed this episode, and he's got
right.
the jacket on, but he's no pants on. He's like, he keeps doing this, he keeps touching his head, but not all the way, like, with the grease. So it feels like that's going to happen, and that's going to be, like, his season arc. But he's still just the assistant coach, and, you know, they've been, I think that's one of the better characters at this point, but still feels premature for that. So I don't know, man. I want to see good basketball. If they nail the basketball in this episode, I'll forgive a lot, and it'll just leave a much better taste in my mouth after this season. But I'm optimistic. I still got hope.
So what did you guys think about Jerry West in this episode? I loved his energy.
I always love his energy, man.
He was like, daunted with that task of, you know, picking a coach.
It's on
yeah.
him again. After trying to avoid responsibility all year, it's back in Jerry West's hands.
Yeah,
I like that scene with him and Bill Sharman when they're kind of waiting in the wings at the end of the game, and Sharman is telling him about, you know, his time in the Army, and basically saying, we were 18 and 19, you know, year old kids scared to death, and every once in a while we would sit there and watch the game, and we're thinking, like, what's so important about this game? Why do we want to watch this game? And then he was just like, but what else will we do? And, like, it actually was that important, you know, because it's like,
yeah,
that's who we are. And so I loved his, you know, kind of taking Jerry's stress and making him realize, like, hey, man, what you're doing is worth something. And it is mm-hmm. worth all of the energy that you're putting into it. I thought that was a really nice moment in the show.
You know who disagrees with you? Jerry West. That's going to do it for us this week on Showtime, the podcast about the show Winning Time, based on the book Showtime, which airs every week on HBO, not Showtime. For Bethany Anderson, Jason Madison, I'm Anthony Mays. We'll see you next time for the real finale, the real Winning Time. And then after that, we'll keep talking about Atlanta for a couple more weeks. And then the great unknown. See you next time.
Peace.